When it comes to growing up, there are no years as turbulent as the teenage years. From emotional ups and downs to dramatic shifts in behavior, teens can often have their parents asking, why is my son or daughter acting that way?
Our next guest has studied the adolescent brain and how it develops, and in a new book, he tries to explain why teens act the way they do and how to promote better understanding between parents and their teens.
Our guest is Dr. Daniel Siegel. He's a professor of psychiatry at the UCLA School of Medicine and executive director of the MindSight Institute. His new book is Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain. Dr. Siegel, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I want to start with a positive. A lot of people look at the teen years as some of the worst you can have in life, but you write that adolescence is an essential time for a lot of things. Can these years actually be some of the best years in some ways?
Absolutely. You know, I think there's a lot of myths out there that make adolescents appear as individuals to be people who are, you know, strewn with raging hormones that drive them out of their minds, or adolescence as a period of time is something we should just get through and hope we survive it. But instead, when you look at the science of adolescence, you realize there's actually an essence to it that can be really cultivated well, and you can have an emotional passion, you can have great relationships, you can have a lot of creativity, in fact, with courage that is the core of actually how we can live vital lives throughout the lifespan, not just when we're adolescents. And so what Brainstorm tries to do is present the science of adolescence, bust the myths that are out there that actually disempower teenagers and older adolescents, and then show what the truths are so that we can actually turn what's usually seen as a very negative time into a very positive one.
The way people talk about teenage brains, and I've probably been guilty of this in my life, it's almost like it's a pathology, right? It's a negative diagnosis, but how do we come to think of it that way?
You know, I think the adolescent period is challenging. There are a lot of changes that we never understood before, and what we see in adolescence is, number one, the onset of puberty, where the body is changing with sexual maturation, and it makes kids act in new ways, different from a child. And so for a young teenager, it can be a very confusing time. The second thing that happens is, in early adolescence, there is impulsivity, where there's action without thought. And while that gets less as we go through the adolescent years, there continues to be risk-taking behavior that baffles adults. And it isn't until recently, when we've seen into the circuitry of the brain, that we've come to understand the nature of that risk-taking behavior and why, in fact, adolescence can be a very dangerous period of life. And when we understand those changes in circuitry, we can actually do something about it. And I think a third thing that goes on is that the period of adolescence goes beyond the teenage years. And so we see this period of time seeming to go on and on into the 20s. And in fact, now we know that the changes in the brain continue into the mid-20s. So we can understand why this is not a period that ends as the teenage years end, but actually goes on even further. So when we see the clarity of the new science, we actually can reframe what adolescence is, which will be helpful for the adults that care for adolescents, but also for adolescents themselves.
You mentioned that the raging hormones concept is a myth, that it's actually just a brain development. So what is happening, and I know this is a huge question, but what are some of the basics of what's happening in the brain during adolescence?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, my in-laws are in Wisconsin, and a shout out to Betty and Neil. And recently I was in Lake Geneva, where we rented a house. It was so cold there. And we had adolescents from 14 to 20 living in this house, and it was so cold, as you remember, over the Christmas time, that we just stayed indoors. And I was talking to them about the book, and I was saying to them, look, let's talk about your life. And we actually had meals, since it was so cold, together, where we talked about what life was like as a child and how it was different once they hit adolescence. And so what we could see when we looked at life this way was that you can actually take the adolescent period and understand it now where it's not raging hormones. The changes in the brain basically can be summarized by the word remodeling. And what remodeling means is that you are pruning down extra connections among the basic cells of the brain, and then you are leading to myelin, which is a growing the sheath that connects the remaining neurons so they coordinate and balance with each other in a much more efficient manner. So this is a really new way of thinking about the brain, that it's remodeling itself. The second thing that happens in the brain that's really important is there are circuits of reward called dopamine circuits, and these circuits are changing such that the adolescent has a lower baseline level of dopamine and a higher release level. And what that means basically for an actual experience is you can feel bored as an adolescent unless you're doing things, and the kinds of things you want to do are new things. Novelty secretes dopamine. And so there's a natural drive to even take risks and do things that you wouldn't have done as a child. When adults see this, they go, oh, well, you know, it's raging hormones. These adolescents are losing their minds. When in fact, it's very adaptive for the brain to make these changes and get the teenager ready to leave home. It's really a preparation period that helps the individual get ready to go out into the world. And also for our species, adolescents actually are the major source of innovation. If you think about what happens in art, in music, in science, and in technology, the major innovations have come from adolescent minds. And the reason is that the adolescent brain is going through this remodeling, and it's basically saying, let me push against adults, let me get more independent from my parents, let me get myself ready to leave home, and let me try to create a new world different from the world that I'm handed from the adults in my life.
And you make the case that not only should we not be fighting back against that, we adults, we should be learning from it.
Absolutely. We really do need to learn from this essence of adolescence. And, you know, when I wrote the Brainstorm book, I wrote it for adolescents themselves as well as adults. And what was striking was that you could really find a way to identify the essence, which is actually an acronym, meaning there are letters that spell the meaning of the word, emotional spark, E-S, social engagement, S-E, novelty, that's the N, and C-E, to complete the word essence, is creative explorations. These four elements come from the remodeling adolescent brain, and it turns out that when you study the adult brain, like your brain and my brain, the way we can keep our brain young is actually based on these four elements: keeping passion in our lives where we care about what's going on, that's the emotional spark, having supportive relationships in our lives, this is the social engagement, having novelty where we try new things, and keeping our minds challenged with creative explorations. If you as an adult listening to this say, how do I keep this essence going on in me, you will have a higher chance of keeping your brain vital, connected, growing throughout the lifespan. And so in many ways, what was fun about writing the book, and I'm going to be really excited to see how it turns out, is that if adolescents read this, they'll realize that this essence is something they can cultivate, and I have skill trainings in the book so that you can learn to cultivate the essence in your life. And for the adult reading it, they may say, wow, I actually can reclaim this essence that I may have given up because I thought it was just childish to have these things. But in fact, these are the exact things we need as we grow into our adulthood throughout the lifespan.
For the teens, you say all four of those things you just listed, novelty seeking, social engagement, increased emotional intensity, and creative exploration, all have upsides and downsides. Let's chase the novelty seeking a little more. What are the up and downsides of that for an adolescent?
Yeah, well, let's start with the downside. Let's start with the upside, because then you'll see why it's there. You know, the way to think about this is the brain needs to change in a certain way so that the child, comfortable at home with what's familiar, certain, and safe, can have some kind of change in their brain that gets them drawn to the unfamiliar, the uncertain, and in some ways, the unsafe. So to give the courage that the child needs to get ready to leave the comfort of home, you've got to do something in the brain. So the changes in the dopamine circuit allow a child to seek novelty, and other changes in other parts of the brain allow you to reason through choices in a different way, where you basically are emphasizing the positive aspect of a choice. This has a downside, it too, because what happens is your brain is focusing only on the thrill and de-emphasizing its focus on the potential dangers. And so, of course, risky behavior happens. And in this risky behavior, what happens is you are three times more likely to encounter something that injures you in a very serious way, if not seriously threatens your life. And so adolescence is definitely a dangerous time of life because the brain is programmed to try out risky things. And what I do in the book is I say, look, if we understand the brain mechanisms of it, so seeing the actual thing that's going on rather than calling it raging hormones, you can teach adolescents to have what I call an internal compass, where you have them draw on their feelings literally in their heart, in their intestines. These gut feelings and heartfelt senses are a source of intuition. And when adolescents get in touch with their intuition, they actually can be guided into positive directions. So instead of just saying, I won't do it because my mom told me not to do it, they actually say, you know, my gut is telling me, even though my head is saying I'm going to drive 100 miles an hour down a surface street, my gut is saying there's something about that that's not quite right. I think I have a feeling I shouldn't do it. That's coming from the adolescent's own internal compass that will direct them in positive ways. So you can deal with the downsides, and that's what I try to do in the book, is talk about the downsides as well as the upsides, how to minimize the downsides and optimize the upsides.
We're talking with Dr. Daniel Siegel about the power and purpose of the teenage brain, and we want to hear from you. What questions about the adolescent mind do you have? If you're the parent of a teenager, or if you're a teenager, we'd love to hear your experiences, good and bad. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send us an email, talk@wpr.org. We're talking with Dr. Daniel Siegel about how the brain develops during the teenage years. His new book is Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234 with your questions and experiences. We'll go right to the phones. We've got Julie with us in Racine. Julie, hi.
Hi there.
What's your question?
I have a child who is 16 years old, going through puberty, but his brain is different, and I'm listening to this with interest. My son has autism, and it's considered developmentally delayed, and I'm wondering if the doctor has looked at any of those kind of differences in relation to what he's talking about with his studies, and how to understand that it's not, quote-unquote, raging hormone.
Gotcha. Thanks, Julie, for the question. Interesting, Dr. Siegel.
Yeah, thanks, Julie, for bringing that up. You know, at UCLA, we have a big center that works with kids on the autism spectrum, and we've done work directly with them clinically, but also work understanding how the brain may be uniquely developing during this period. And what I would suggest to you is that some of the changes that happen in adolescence are really important to understand, that when you're challenged in this area that I actually teach in the book called Mindsight, this ability to see the mind, to sense feelings and thoughts, to understand your own feelings and thoughts, to sense them in someone else, it's one of the most important areas that's challenged in autism. And there are ways of helping kids learn to do that. Usually it's best done not so much with a book, which you can try to do with this Brainstorm book, but it's best done with a one-on-one kind of relationship in a professional setting or with you as a parent. So Mindsight, the skills that are taught in the book, in general, is what someone with autism needs to try to learn, and it will really help his adolescent period go better the more he can understand his own inner feelings and what they mean for him, and also try to interpret what's going on inside of another person's inner life, their feelings, their thoughts, what they mean by the signals they send. Those are things that actually could be quite helpful for him as he enters the adolescent period.
You give a lot of examples of Mindsight exercises in the book. Can you share one that is maybe simple enough we can describe it just on the radio?
Yeah. Well, a Mindsight exercise would be simply, how do you see the mind? So you say, well, what is the mind? On one level, the mind is your feelings. Another level, the mind is your thoughts. So in the book, we have exercises where I teach you how to basically sift the mind. Now, what is sift? SIFT is the acronym. You first sense your sensations. That's the S, and that would mean what's your heart doing? What's your sensation of your lungs breathing in and out? What's the feeling in your intestines? What's the sensation from your muscles? It's a very simple exercise, but it's amazing these days with kids so focused on the internet and on screens how little they pay attention to their own sensations. So that's the S. I is imagery. We go through an exercise where you try to imagine visual images that are in your mind or even hearing sounds like a song. And taking that time to reflect inward on images, very, very important for getting to know what's going on in certain parts of your brain that are very tuned into what's going on inside of you. What's the F? Feelings. Feelings are the emotions that you have, and it's also something that is very important for us to be able to not only be aware of, but actually to name, and that's the basis of emotional intelligence. And the T, you can imagine, is thought. So you can pay attention to what you're thinking. And so one of the exercises of the many in the book is to learn how to sift your mind. So for someone who's learning MindSight, whether they're someone who's developing typically or someone on the autism spectrum, it's really important to learn this sifting technique. It's the basis for MindSight, and when you can sift your own mind, it actually develops the same circuitry in your brain that you're going to use to sift the mind of another person, and that's basically the basis of empathy. And when we're in empathic relationships, when you really sense another person's inner life, those are the kinds of communications that make us feel close to someone, that allow us to have supportive relationships. And these relationships are very important for how we develop well-being in life.
Thanks for the call, Julie. We'll go to the phones again with Lori in Dodgeville. Lori, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. It's a great program. You know, I was wondering between boys and girls, I have a son, he's now 19, and I was wondering, he's been a risk taker since he was two. Is there a big difference between boys and girls as far as risk taking? And once they get to be like 19, my son is, will he stop, you know, taking, or when does that stop, the risk taking?
Yeah.
Because he's still pretty adventurous.
Yes, it's a great question. I can tell you, you know, my father-in-law, Neil, who's on the line, and my mother-in-law, Betty, you know, in Wisconsin, they had a farm, and they had two boys and two girls. And I can tell you from the family stories, the boys were risk-takers, and the girls were not risk-takers. And you see this kind of thing in general with what you would do on a tractor or what you would do running around. And this kind of danger that boys are more likely to get into can happen more with boys, and I think your son is experiencing it. Now, this is not globally across the genders, but what you can see is that some boys don't take physical risks, and some girls do. So you see a whole spectrum. Now, your question is, well, if my son was taking risks when he was younger, is he going to continue taking risks? And part of this relates to temperament. So we do know some kids are born with a temperament that gets them to try out physical things that are more likely to hurt themselves, and other people are more what's called risk averse, and that can be a trait that can continue. But the fact is that as he goes through adolescence, he may actually develop out of this because he may come to realize that he doesn't like his body getting injured. He may, as he develops into the 20s, because adolescence goes into that age, he may really learn that, you know, this is not something I really care to do. If he does the MindSight skill work that's in the book, he's going to develop this internal compass we were talking about that will allow him, when he's approaching a choice on a behavior, riding a motorcycle without a helmet, jumping off, you know, a cliff, or, you know, all sorts of things I give examples of in the book, he may pause, reflect on whether he wants to carry out that impulse, and then choose not to carry it out. And so a MindSight skill can actually develop the part of the brain that allows you to decrease risk-taking behavior. And this is why I wrote the book for adolescents as well as adults, is because if an adolescent reads the book and does the exercises, it can develop the part of his brain that can make the chance of getting injured from risky behaviors much less. And this is where, you know, it would be up to him to choose to do it. You can't tell him to do it. But if he decided that's what he wanted to do, these are the kind of skills he would need to develop to stop taking those risks.
Dr. Siegel, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you, and keep warm in this wonderful weather you're having.
We will try. That's Dr. Daniel Siegel. His new book is Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain.